Earlier this year, he graduated summa cum laude from Georgetown University with a Bachelor of Science in Human Science. Alongside medicine, Mr. Sarouche is particularly interested in the interaction of public health programs and traditional values in the Middle East. To that end, he has researched extensively into the Iranian political system and has some experience observing the Iranian healthcare system. So this should be interesting. Please go forward.
This is going to be a little bit different than the presentations we've seen before. I have a little bit less experience than the people who have gone before me, but basically what we did, along with Dana, who's sitting in the audience, and Professor Gilson, is that we looked at Egypt and we thought, what could we learn from Iran, which has had a very successful family planning program? And we looked at this in a very theoretical way, given that we didn't really have much money to do any data collection, and we tried to find things that we could take from Iran and apply to Egypt. I have no relationships to disclose. This is just an overview of family planning in Iran and Egypt. And on the left, you see that it's interesting that Egypt and Iran started out, in terms of total fertility rate, almost at the same point about 30 years ago. And right now, they're very different. And I think that's the main point to take away from this slide. The other thing I want to note is that if you look at the contraceptive prevalence rate in Egypt, it's 60%, which leaves room for improvement. And if you look in rural areas, the rate is even lower. It's actually about 48.4% in rural Upper Egypt, and that's compared to 62.4% in urban Upper Egypt. So that's an average, obviously, and it doesn't give the whole picture. The second thing is that these two countries are a little bit different, and we'll kind of mention that later, in terms of adult literacy. And that plays a role in family planning because it's kind of a contextual feature in the environment that makes the knowledge that you disseminate stick a little more, maybe. Women feel more empowered if they have more literacy. It's one of those broad indicators of a lot of things, and I stuck it in there to kind of give a comparison. So the reason we decided to use Iran as a model for best practices is that it's a country in the similar region, so they have similar societies. Obviously, there are differences, but as a generalization, they're similar societies. And now that Egypt has had a revolution, they're starting to, again, as a generalization, have similar political systems. And in terms of Iran, the total fertility rate actually increased after the revolution. But what's interesting is that in 1989, they made a complete reversal. And I'll talk more about these later. The main point is that their total fertility rate shot straight down into the ground and is now at 1.7. And this is important. And, we decided to look particularly through all these four things here that Iran implemented. It obviously created a large, extensive program to tackle family planning. So we decided to look at those aspects that Iran implemented and see which of those we could apply to Egypt. And so we came up with this research question, and we looked in the literature, and we looked in the data for both Iran and Egypt, and we tried to see how can Iran offer best practices with that premise I mentioned. And the thing that stuck out very quickly when we looked at the demographic and health survey for Egypt was that if you look at why currently married women are not using contraception, assuming they're not trying to get pregnant or they can't get pregnant, which is fertility-related reasons, that a pretty large number, 30% in terms of people not currently using, and that are, sorry, so non-fertility-related is 41%. Of that amount is 30%. So 30% of the people who could get pregnant are not using contraception because of opposition to use. And what that was defined as was basically any form of reason that they wouldn't use contraception. That wasn't method related or other things. So we looked a little bit more into the literature to see what kind of opposition to use there was, what was kind of representative of those rejections. And what stuck out to us was that in the Muslim world in general, that there's a rejection of the development rationale for family planning. That's the idea that you should push family planning. It makes the issue broader and on the national level instead of down at the family level. And that just doesn't seem to stick in those countries. The other thing was that pronatalism was an issue that was particularly strong in that pronatalism was emphasized very strongly because in the Middle East and in Muslim countries in general, it's considered a contribution to society and a contribution to the families if you have more children. And that may also be economic in nature, but at this point it's also cultural. And the pronatalism in society seems to be much stronger than the outside forces of people coming in, maybe from USAID, and just using the development rationale to push a kind of different perspective. The second thing that I thought was really interesting was that they looked at family planning as a Western conspiracy that was there to constrain the Muslim population and make it smaller and weaker and less able to resist imperialism. And that's definitely something that was a predominant view by religious leaders in Iran before the revolution. And what's interesting is that quickly shifted once they saw the benefits of family planning after they came into power. So religious leaders in Iran before the revolution, and what's interesting is that quickly shifted one perception as kind of a fatalistic view, and that it was predetermined, that what happens, and therefore I shouldn't stand in the way of God's will. And altogether, all these things are things that can be addressed if you look and target religious leaders who have the most influence on these issues. And that's why we again looked at Iran as a model. I'm just going to quickly go over what they did in Iran. So Iran originally, pre-1979, as I mentioned, religious leaders were very much against family planning for the reasons I mentioned, and also because the family planning program was something imposed from the outside via a Western-leaning dictator. So for them, it made political sense, it made cultural sense, and so they pushed against it. When they got into power, they realized very quickly that their population is skyrocketing. Something like the population between 1976 and 1986 increased 50% in 10 years. And this was despite a war going on at the same time, the Iran-Iraq War. I guess they realized really quickly that that's not sustainable. And in 1989, they basically made a drastic reversal in their policy. And these four components were very important in the success of that. In particular, we thought that religious leaders were a very important component given the opposition they played in family planning and the special role they have in accessing those communities that are most opposed to family planning. So we decided to go back to the Demographic and Health Survey and see whether there was any work being done with religious leaders in Egypt. And what we found here, if you look at the top graph, is that in Egypt, most of the family planning messaging is mostly, it's through radio and television and poster boards. And the religious leaders seem to have very little interaction with the communities. What's interesting also is that religious leaders have a pretty good standing with the nation and community. This is a national survey, so it's not so it's it gives you a good idea. 80% of the country has very good or somewhat good ratings of religious institutions. And this has been pretty well covered during this conference, but Muslim leaders have traditionally emphasized good ratings, these pro-family planning themes. The first one is actually the most important because it goes directly against the idea of pronatalism and the idea that having more Muslims is good for Muslim society. And what they push instead is that it's important to have a strong Muslim society, but the only way you can achieve that is with a smaller, higher quality Muslim population. And birth spacing has been covered, so I'll move along with that. The other thing is that I haven't mentioned Coptic religious leaders a lot. Thank you. But in Egypt, there are Coptic Christians, and they actually have not been too much of an obstacle to family planning in Egypt, but I'm sure they can still be used moving forward in terms of engagement with the community. They have no opposition to family planning, essentially. So the conclusion we reached is that local religious leaders are an untapped resource. In a USAID pilot project in 2004 about where they engaged local Christian and Muslim leaders who attended a workshop, they found that only about 20% before the workshop had a firm understanding of basic issues like birth spacing and when to have the first birth. So these aren't too complicated issues, and it seems that Muslim leaders on the national level have pushed it, but I guess it just hasn't reached on the local level. And we found this in Iran too. They repeatedly emphasized in the literature that the key to Iran's success was reaching out from the national level, where you had obviously a theocracy, taking from Ayatollah Khomeini and going down to the local clerics, making sure they got the message, making sure they went out and propagated that message. So the conclusions we came up with, the suggested policy changes, the goal was to increase the utilization of desired family planning services in Egypt. And the specific way was by targeting that opposition to use. And the way we would target that opposition to use, as I've mentioned, is by focusing on the local religious leaders and getting them up to speed on religious rationales for family planning that they would be amenable to. We actually, towards the end of our research, realized that this has been implemented through USAID and Pathfinder International. They did a program in Egypt called Takamol, and it's a multi-pronged program, but one of the things they did was that they made very sure that there was direct cooperation between health officials and religious leaders, and they made sure that you interacted both with the male religious leaders and female religious leaders so that you made sure you got both males and females. They did a two-step thing where they educated the core religious leaders. They educated a group of religious leaders and helped them work on their ability to talk about family planning, improve their knowledge base, their ability to sit down with members of their congregation and just have that conversation. They made sure they followed up afterwards and any issues that they came across could be addressed. And afterwards, they encouraged the religious leaders to employ their knowledge, have sermons, have meetings in the community, counsel individuals and couples. But it ended in 2011, and I couldn't really find out what happened after that. My hope is that they take it, make it institutionalized, not just for the religious leaders, engagement of religious leaders, but the other aspects that dealt with maternal health and child health. So that is okay. Thank you. The final thing I'd like to address are the potential obstacles to my recommendations. given the political stability in Egypt at the moment, the issue of family planning may not be at the top of the agenda. It's not exactly the same pressing issue it was when Iran stepped in and flipped course. The other thing that's not on here, but the Muslim Brotherhood has actually in the past been one of the most adamant opponents of family planning in Egypt, so it would be interesting to see how the current government, though not officially affiliated with the Brotherhood, has strong associations with it. It would be interesting to see how family planning changes in the new environment. Family planning, again, is a politicized issue, so it would be interesting to see if it's still tied to the old regime or if it will be brought into the new paradigm that I'm speaking of. Another problem is that in Iran you have a centralized religious authority. It's easy to go from an ayatollah down front when you're in a theocracy to compel the religious leaders to do what you want. In Egypt that's not the case, and obviously the last two are pretty self-explanatory. Money is an obstacle and the logistical things you have. Thank you.